Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fightin' Words and the Fightin' Words News Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services, the doctors, nurses, and first responders to COVID, and especially salute to the people who stock the shelves in the supermarkets to keep us healthy and wealthy. Tonight's program starts a little upbeat and then unfortunately a downbeat. Our upbeat is 20 years ago, one of the founding members of our staff, Adam Jaco. Adam is a professional fighter of his own, retired, and has started the Uppercut Fitness Club. Adam has five Golden Glove aspirants in his gym right now working out. Tonight they're having their first big bout, and the one kid who will probably win the Golden Gloves for the state of Florida is fighting at 8 o'clock tonight at the Circus Distillery and Brewery in Sarasota. It's a 20-card fight, and it's going to be a good one. So if you're in the Sarasota, Charlotte County, Manatee County area, you might want to have you want to see some excellent stuff. Go down and see what's going on at the Circus Distillery and Brewing Company, just off Fruitville Road, just east of 75. On a sad note, one of our active contributors, Bernard Fernandez, his wife passed away, and passed away on the 5th of May. She was a former critical care nurse at Fitzgerald Mercy Hospital. She's a mother of five. So Bernard, I know you were at the viewing this afternoon, and you and the family are seated at home. I know you always listen. Our deepest regrets go out to you and the family. And please, if there's anything we can do, just let us know. All right. Well, we got that all out of the way, Z. What do you think? Tonight, Lomachenko and Gunbosa.
Yeah, first I want to say hello and much condolences to Bernard Fernandez and the family on the passing of his wife. Speaking on again, Bosa's been Lomachenko. Lomachenko always looks good, but you see his limitations. I think weight has a lot to do with it. I always say that he's fighting at least the weight division over what he should be. But with that said, I mean, Lomachenko is, I know he's in his late 30s. And talent-wise, I don't think that Kambosa can hold a candle to him, talent-wise. Physically, I think Kambosa's matches up better than him physically. It depends on how that works out right now. Just is Lomachenko able to use his skill to navigate Gambosa's physical advantages, or has that time passed for him? Gambosa is skillful. Don't get it wrong. He's active. He's a guy who's going to be there. He's not a guy who's going to be there all the time willy nilly. But Devin Haney was able to kind of more or less control Gambosa for two fights. And if Lomachenko has what he needs, if age hasn't caught up to him, then I expect it to be a pretty good night for Lomachenko. I don't think he'll knock Kambosa out, but I don't see Kambosa giving him the trouble that other opponents give Lomachenko.
Hey, what do you think, Ty?
No, I have to completely agree with Zito. Unless Lomachenko is completely cooked and past it, I think, like Zito said, he doesn't stop Kambosa, but he wins a pretty wide decision. Kambosa, he does have some advantages in height, he's the bigger guy, obviously. Lomachenko is punching above his weight at 135. But with that said, outside of, pretty quick hands, Kambosa's kind of, his game is the kind of, have you right in front of him, and again, he has pretty quick hands, and he likes to set up counters here and there. But he's pretty limited as far as speed, power, footwork. He's a solid pro. He's a good fighter. But Lomachenko, I believe, even at the age, is still an elite fighter, and an elite fighter beats Kambosa pretty convincingly most of the time. So I gotta completely concur with Zito.
Okay. All right, I'm going to start out with you on this one. Derek Lewis versus Rodrigo Nascasino, the huge Cuban that's fighting tonight. Bye.
I don't really know. And I think the reason why I'm saying that is because, first and foremost, you never kind of know which Derek Lewis is going to show up, whether he's got back injuries. Mm-hmm. And then with that said, every fight for Derek Lewis is the puncher's chance because, most of his fights, most of the guys he's fighting are more actually complete than him. He's just more dangerous and more devastating and efficient at the one thing he does and does well. I'm not as familiar with Nacimiento, but obviously if he can avoid the big shot, he has a chance. Right now I got to lean towards Derek Lewis because he is the more proven commodity, and this is a bit of a step up. So it'll be interesting to see. But right now I lean towards Derek Lewis. Typically I go with the more process-driven fighter, but until you prove that the process, your processes can work at a higher level, you know, I got to go with the more proven commodity.
Okay. What do you think, Z?
I never count Derek Lewis out of a fight for the most part, unless he gets things happen to him early, which when he loses, things tend to happen to him earlier than later. He's a guy who, he doesn't have the best cardio, but he knows how to manipulate himself throughout a fight. He's dangerous throughout all of the fight. So I never count Derek Lewis out. With that said, it seems that when the major steps up in competition, he just doesn't seem to get past to me. I like Derek Lewis. He's entertaining. He's a guy, entertaining, with his voice and with his fighting style. But he's a bit below that upper tier right now. And I think that's just kind of his career. Which is why this is a good fight for him, because the guy is stepping up to him. You know what I mean? So Derek is a proven commodity. So with this guy stepping up to Derek Lewis, and Zito's kind of right. You know, I think what we're kind of describing in a sense is a gatekeeper. Derek Lewis tends to lose when he steps up in competition. But he tends to push guys back when they step up in competition. So tonight, competition, can Derek Lewis push him back? It'll be interesting.
Okay. Here's a question for both of you. Will the real blood test please stand up?
I've been hearing different accounts of the B sample to Ryan Garcia's sample, a PED sample. As I said last week, I didn't want to speak on it until the B sample came out. Apparently it's really hard to speak on it now because I don't really have official accounts. I hear varying accounts, but I'm not sure what is official yet. And pardon me, I haven't read, done my due diligence as far as research, as far as that goes. I've just kind of read on the surface a few different accounts of his B sample. So,
I'm just trying to pull up Tony's. From what we got this earlier this week, it said Dan Raphael has reported that Ryan Garcia's last lab results are back, and for his previous positive for a banned substance of PED-19 for April 19th urine and are not confirmed. That says they did not confirm the presence of the substance. Now that came out 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
Yeah, but that's only one substance. He tested positive for two. So according to that report, he came back negative for the one substance he tested positive for. Yeah. But there's been no report on the second substance he also tested positive for. So, that's why you don't really know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The one thing about Dan Rayfield is obviously if Dan Rayfield is not a rumor monger, so if he's quoting it, it's pretty much that's what it is. But even that is partial information, right? So we really don't know yet.
Ty, why did Jamal, what's the name? We got here. Where is it? Damn it. Jamal Hill, Charlo, give up his, why was he stripped of his title?
Because he hasn't fought in 3 years and just got caught driving drunk and fleeing the scene of a crime. That's about it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Jamal Charlo just fought Jose Benavidez, and he fought him at 168. Before that, he hadn't fought and defended his title and so in 2 years. So he hasn't defended the title in 3 years. And now, like I said, he just got, you know, arrested for DUI and fleeing the scene and all this foolishness. So the WB, they should have stripped him a year ago, a year, 2 years ago. He's been sitting on a title without defending it for several years. So it unfortunately, it took him doing something egregious outside of the ring before they decided to go ahead and do something inside the ring.
Sorry about that, guys. We had a surge in power down here. Z, what do you think about Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal? There's some talk about them getting together for a fight.
Yeah.
They're the original, what is it, BMF title or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, in last recent form,
you know they're signed to fight a boxing match.
Oh, they're signed to fight a boxing match?
Yeah, it's already signed. It was actually scheduled. They had a scheduling conflict, so it's being moved to another date and location. But, no, they're signed, actually signed to fight a boxing match, just to give you some proper context to that story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes it a bit easier. I have to pick Nate Diaz. Two reasons. The first reason is he's done it more recently. He's taken a boxing match with the big lights and everything more recently. And he's fought a guy mm-hmm. who's, probably, to me, more proficient in boxing than Jorge Masvidal. And he didn't do terrible. He did pretty good. Second is cardio. Jorge Masvidal is explosive. In boxing, that could serve you a little raw. Because, you can explode for a minute, but boxing matches are more, you know, if you can't get a guy out of there, then it becomes a durational battle. And
mm-hmm.
Nate Diaz is more of a durational boxer than Jorge Masvidal. Jorge Masvidal, to me, he has to explode and hurt Nate Diaz several times and put him down or just knock him out. Nate Diaz can outbox Jorge Masvidal into a victory. That's kind of what I said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think, Ty?
Yeah, I have no idea. It's two older guys who are MMA fighters in a boxing match. We could analyze who has the better boxing. I kind of lean with Zito. And, you know, Nate has also boxed more recently. But, yeah, man, I have no idea. These are two past their prime fighters fighting in a different sport altogether. So it's kind of like saying, hey, who do you think will win a one-on-one basketball, Andre Agassi or Tiger Woods? I'd be like, I have no idea. You know what I mean? So, that's honestly, I understand Zito's prediction, but I could make counter arguments for Masvidal, and it just really comes to these guys are fighting in a sport that they don't fight in, and they're both past their prime. So on fight night, you know, I just don't know.
Do you think there'd be a chance that Khabib will fight Dustin Poirier?
Khabib is done.
Yeah.
You must mean Islam.
Well, he may have to come back because he owes $3 million in taxes to Russia. So he's got to figure out how to get that money.
Well, you know, Dustin is signed to fight Islam Makhachev next.
Right.
And so, that's the fight. Anything you're hearing with Khabib is just talk. Because his guy, is mm-hmm. already scheduled to fight Dustin.
Okay.
And Makhachev is predicting He said that the guillotine will be Dustin Poirier's downfall. That's the last thing I read about that fight. And he also, and outside of him calling Dustin the easy fight for him. So,
hey, that's not bad.
I mean,
what do you think
be,
about?
I don't think it's ever wise to talk that way and to feel that way. So,
right. Yeah, we can get to. Last week we didn't get to Jose Aldo versus Steve Irsay on 301. What's your thought on that, Zeke?
I always like Jose Aldo. He's a legend in the game. I mean, he's proven. He's been around for a while. He's been around for a while, and to me, I mean, exciting guy in an exciting style. Got to see how he does as time goes on.
Okay. Ty, what do you think about Aspen Ladd moving over to Bellator?
She could do well over there. Obviously, if you're in Bellator, the big fight is Cyborg. I don't like her in that fight, but at the same time, you know, it would be the money fight. And, you know, now is the time to catch Cyborg. Cyborg is a little older now. She's 38, and she's been more focused actually on boxing lately. But, you know, if the UFC is not re-signing someone, then, you know, this is what Bellator and PFL and, you know, this is what all these organizations are for. And this is why, you know, monopoly is never good, right? Because if you have a monopoly, right, then these fighters don't have jobs. So that's the main thing.
Okay. The what about we got Adrian Broner coming up in a couple of weeks. One, will he make it into the ring or not? And two, what's your thoughts about that one? He's got
isn't he fighting Blair the Flair Cobb?
See what?
Adrian Broner's been a guy who's been live on social media, I haven't heard from him in the ring for, to me, what, maybe a few years?
Yeah.
And Adrian Broner, he's not a young guy. He's been shouting at Devin Haney and everything. So, like, right now he has a name that he's not using. I don't know how he's going to do when he gets in the ring. I don't know the level of competition he's fighting. Hopefully it's nothing near high. But I don't know what kind of guy we're going to have when he gets in the ring. So, as I say, he has a name, but he hasn't used it, so we don't even know, you know, what he has.
Right. Well, you know, on a high note, our friend Bob Alexander, after all his illnesses, finally started back tonight. There's a down in Fort Lauderdale, put on by the Hard Rock, and Bob's down there doing announcing, which is really great. He hasn't been able to work in over a year. Actually, a year and a half he's been out of the ring, but now that he's able to get back in, and he's got that one, and then he's got two more fights coming up in Tampa in the next 2 weeks, and then after that is the Hall of Fame on June that's coming up. So
that's good
shout
stuff,
out
man.
To Bob.
Good to hear he's doing well. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay. All right. Here's one for you, Ty. Bivol and Milik Zinad. Is that how you say it? Zinad. On the first of June.
Well, I mean, you got to lean towards Bivol because he's fighting an unknown guy who's taking a fight because Better BF pulled out due to injury. So typically in situations like that, the promotional team, and this is not without knowing anything about this guy, but typically in situations like that, when you're trying to save the fight date due to injury, but you're trying to also preserve the big fight, Bivol's not going to be in with anybody super threatening. And, you know, with that said, I think Bivol is at worst the second best light heavyweight fighter on the planet at worst. So I expect him to come out of, you know, this fight unscathed and go ahead and meet Better Biev in the postponement when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of talk out there right now about Tom Aspinall ducking fights, and he also talked. They also a lot of talk about a tailor-made fight with Alex Pereira. One, I guess, will that ever? Do you ever see that happen? Either one of you, do you ever see that happening? And two, if it does, will Jones prevail?
You know what? John Jones is very calculated. And here's the thing. Tom Aspinall is the interim heavyweight champion. But, and John Jones is also the heavyweight champion. Tom Aspinall is the interim champion. Obviously, John Jones is waiting for this Stipe Miocic fight. What has happened, the reason why you're hearing this is because John Jones tweeted out that, you know, him and him versus Alex Pereira at heavyweight would be the biggest fight in UFC history. That's how all this began. It's not something that had been talked about in practicality and actuality. Just something John Jones said that got everybody talking. And so the reality of it is Alex Pereira, as dangerous as he is, absolutely deadly, would be moving up to heavyweight. He started his career at 185. He's now the 205-pound champion. He'd be moving up to heavyweight. That is versus a Tom Aspinall, who is a heavyweight and who has great boxing and great jiu-jitsu. Think about it. John Jones against Alex Pereira, the bigger name, the smaller guy with no wrestling at all, versus the British guy with the smaller name who's the bigger guy with boxing and wrestling. It's a more marketable, easy fight for John Jones, easier fight.
Mm-hmm.
Caden will tell you that. Where's Caden at? Because, you know, Caden's high on Aspinall. That's why John Jones says that. It is. It's a bigger fight because of Pereira's name and what he looks like. But it really – now, Pereira moved up to heavyweight and were to beat Aspinall, then it'd be that big fight. But if you're just talking about Pereira moving up to fight John Jones – and Aspinall is just out of the equation. It's just a bigger, more money. You know, it's a bigger money fight. So that's what that is. But you know, I personally think what it is the ideal thing would be for Pereira to go up and challenge Aspinall, and you know that winner would fight John Jones. The fact of the matter is, I personally and a lot of people don't think John Jones is ever going to fight Tom Aspinall, and it's not that he's scared. Aspinall, but that's just a lot of risk for no reward. Aspinall hasn't really proven anything outside of the fact that he could be the next guy at heavyweight. But he hasn't proven anything that when you look back historically at a John Jones resume, if he beats Aspinall, unless Aspinall proves to be that dude and beats everybody else, that's just another guy on a ledger. Right now, if he were to beat Pereira, and people say, oh, he beat a guy who, you know, was killing everybody in two weights. You know what I mean? Even though he's the smaller guy. Because, you know, history looks back at things very superficially. History doesn't look back as nuanced as what's going on today. Zito, I'll tell you that. You know how history looks back at things. That's why you have a whole generation saying, Floyd Mayweather's the best ever because he was undefeated. Because history doesn't view things as nuanced. We know that Floyd is not the best ever, you know? So.
All right. What do you think, C?
Yeah. As far as John Jones calling Tejada out, to me, that's more, as Ty said, that's more propaganda. That's mm-hmm. just more propaganda. Realistically, the UFC is the king. They're going to determine mm-hmm. kind of more or less what goes on. John Jones has had sort of a free hand, but he's also kind of muddied that hand up himself. So, you know, it's a bit of touch and go with him, I think, at this time. And he's getting older. How long is he going to be around not fighting anybody for a while? Like he seems to be born. I mean, it's going to get to a point to where they're going to have to move off of John Jones. It's going to have to promote somebody. And you know how the UFC, they put the two play favorites. Tell me, I'm sorry, they play their favorites. And it's a business out there. But maybe are they going to move up to Aspinall? Is he capable of holding that torch? Because Stipe is on his way. I mean, maybe he has two or three more fights left himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so right now, John Jones, he can say what he wants, but it's coming to where it's going to have to be a passing of the torch not too long. So how are they going to move up to heavyweight? And is he going to be the man? I mean, so as far as that goes, I mean, the talk is going to be the talk, but ultimately, the UFC is going to move the way the UFC. Dana White, that collaboration is going to move the way it's going to move. Regardless of what John Jones tweets out and how they're moving up.
Okay. Well, what do you think? Let me ask you this. What do you think Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley have been having a feud back and forth? And I guess it's one of the things is the defense of Gavrichel. He's calling him a sorry-ass champion. Do you think we'll ever see a Sterling versus O'Malley to get this feud straightened out?
Well, you know, we just saw that, and Sterling got knocked out and moved up in weight and just had a dominating performance up in weight. So, now, Mirashab is going to have to go ahead and avenge his brother, Aljamain Sterling, but they're talking trash because of comments that were made regarding their fight. And, again, you know, since then, Sterling's moved up and had a tremendous performance up a weight class against, you know, a top five guy. So, you know, unless, you know, O'Malley eventually loses the title or moves up, their business is done. And Mirashab will be the proxy.
Hey, we got the, you know, we talked about moving up and everything, but, you know, when you take it back to boxing and look at Canelo has proven now he's the best in that area. Do you think... Who would be the next? I knew that would work somewhere.
Fruity was the best at one time in that area, but days change and things change. So
things seem to change last Saturday night. I thought so.
Great. Yeah. You think whoever? Who do you think would be the next one for Canelo?
Well, they're talking about Berlanga. They're leaning hard on Berlanga. And Benavidez, Canelo said, you know, maybe for $2 million, he'll see Benavidez. $200 million. He'll see Benavidez. Benavidez is probably going to just move up in weight because it's going to be a minute, and he's not going to stay at 168 waiting for Canelo. Now, if Canelo fights him, it's going to end up being at 168. And Canelo is, when you get in boxing, you tend to get a little crafty. You have little tricks that you can do to people. Canelo will go ahead and let Benavidez get comfortable at 175 at light heavyweight and then request a fight at 168 to boil him down, to kind of drain him. So, I mean, you know, just for a large amount of money. So, I mean, there are things that, you know, also that he could do. I don't think Canelo right now, I think he has business that the unfinished business with Jaime Munguia, to be honest. I don't think he won the fight, to be honest. I mean,
for real?
You didn't? I did not think Canelo won that fight.
Oh, wow.
He dropped Jaime early. But Canelo, first thing is this. He didn't do nearly as much work as Jaime. Canelo got hit more in that fight than I've ever seen him get hit. I got to a moment where I was like, oh, my goodness, Canelo's tough. But with that said, Canelo had to work all fight long. And even in my predictions, I predicted Canelo to win. Not with controversy, but I predicted Canelo just to kind of win. What I saw is Canelo does not have the lungs for certain things. And he does not have the lungs for Jaime Munguia. He had to work all night long. Even when Canelo is used to taking his nice breaks in the towards the middle of the rounds and then he'll bring it back, he was not able to do that whatsoever. And then coming to the end of the round where he turns it on, he was landing the shots he wanted to, but he was so tired because he had to work all fight long that they were not effective. And Jaime Munguia's shot seemed to be on par with his then. So I mean, a man giving him maybe three rounds outside of the knock, well, with the knockdown round. I may have given him three total rounds. Outside of that, I thought Jaime, I worked him for the majority of the fight.
Okay. All right. How about Ty, what do you think about Armin? I'm going to screw this on Sarkadian versus Islam Makhachevich.
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, right, but when Armin Sarukian first came to the UFC, his debut fight was against Islam Makhachev, and Islam beat him, but it was one of those competitive fights with a clear winner. I always look at Floyd against Miguel Cotto, where it was competitive, but Floyd was winning most rounds. They were just competitive rounds. And since then, Sarukian has grown, and, you know, he just dispatched of Charles Oliveira. So, obviously, if Makhachev does his thing and defends his title against Dustin Poirier, then that is the fight to make. And Sarukian has... I mean, he's the younger guy. He's gotten better. Let's see what happens with, you know, obviously I lean towards Makhachev against Poirier, but I don't rule Poirier out. Is it Poirier? Yeah. After that fight, then I would break down Sarukian. But until Makhachev takes care of his next opponent, then I'd break that. Like, until then, I couldn't get into that fight. Because, you know, things change. He might not look like the same guy. And, you know, fighting, more than anything, recent form tends to mean a lot in fighting. Because recent form in fighting is, a lot of times is indicative of a bigger issue. So before I could predict a rematch between those two combatants, I got to see Makhachev take care of Poirier.
Okay. All right. I guess let me ask you a question, Z. Do you think that we'll ever see a Canelo Crawford fight?
No. Just because really Crawford draws no money. He draws no money as far as Canelo's concerned. And Canelo, from what I read, he said himself that Crawford is not. There would be no real worth in beating Crawford. He's a lighter guy, substantially, to Canelo at the moment. Canelo's not going to boil himself down to meet Crawford anywhere. Crawford has no financial incentive for Canelo to do that. Crawford would have to move up to 168. Now, as I say, there are bigger and other fights to make than Crawford. I mean, right now. So I don't think that Canelo's even eyeing Crawford. There is no reason for him to.
Okay. What do you think, Ty?
Now, you know, when Canelo was asked, he said a few things, but the big thing that stood out to me was he said, I would get no credit for it. And that's absolutely right. He would get no credit for beating the guy who started at 135 and made his, career famous at welterweight, and then came up to 168 to fight Canelo. He would get no credit. That's a lose-lose because, like Zito said, I mean, it would be a relatively bigger – it'd be a bigger fight because Crawford, he broke it through a little bit with the Errol Spence fight, and, hardheads know how good Crawford is. But like Zito said, Crawford is not a major draw. So Canelo's still carrying the weight of the promotion. So not only is it not a huge financial incentive, but there's no legacy incentive either. You were supposed to be the guy who started at 135, who you're three weight divisions bigger than. There's absolutely no incentive for Canelo to fight that fight. He's absolutely right. He gets no credit. Win or lose, he would get more fighting David Benavidez, period. You know what I mean? Because David Benavidez is now, he's a two-time champion at that weight. He's got a tough fight, at light heavyweight. He does. He has a pretty tough fight at light heavyweight against Voscek. If Voscek is in form, that could be a good fight. But with that said, we know what kind of monster Benavidez is. Canelo would get more credit going up and losing to Benavidez than he would if he were to beat Crawford. So it's just and it would be a bigger fight financially for him too. So, yeah.
All right. What do you think? Do you think we'll ever see a Sean Strickland and Duplessis fight?
Sean Strickland. As long as Sean Strickland, as long as Sean Strickland keeps winning, wins his next fight, I'm not sure how that's scheduled. But Sean Strickland keeps winning, absolutely.
Okay, what do you think, Ty?
Zito had half the equation right. They both either have to keep winning or keep losing, and they'll meet up again. Sean Strickland obviously, lost the title to Duplessis. That was their last fight was against each other. So if we'll see them meet up, it'll be, the last time they both fought was against each other, right? So if they meet up, it will be, if there is a rematch, being as though there was no immediate rematch. If there is a rematch, Sean Strickland either has to work his way back to the title with Duplessis maintaining the title, or they kind of lose and meet up. You know what I mean? So, so it could very well. And, the middleweight division at the top of it is been kind of thin and historically thin. There's a very good chance they could meet up again.
Okay. There was a this other one over here. I'm trying to flip through. I've got pages of stuff here. I got set up for tonight. How about Josh Taylor and Jack Cottrell? They've got a rematch coming up in the 25th of this month.
Yeah, I always kind of I like Josh Taylor, but I'm saying slippage in him, and I'm more or less waiting for him to fall off the edge. I think this – I don't know if this is going to be the fight, but it's coming soon. It's coming soon. Josh Taylor has a style that you always like saying, but it's – it's lasting longer than it should to me. And I just think, time's going to come to where it's going to be it. Don't know if this is going to be the fight, but it has the potential to me.
Okay. Hey, Ty, Connor Ben's been
suspended once again on an ongoing doping saga. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity or the time to really read deep into it, but it is a provisional suspension from what I read. Not exactly sure what that entails or how that is going to work, or even if it's something that's going to stop him from being active, because he's been out for quite a while, and so it could be a suspension provisionally. Like, you know what, you were suspended. During that time you're out, we're, you know, kind of like time served. So I didn't read the details of what's going on, but it hasn't, you know, stopped him and his team from seeking out opponents. So, again, I really couldn't tell you any more than that. I didn't get a chance to read it.
Okay. Shakur Stevens talking about going free agent. Do you think he can do that?
He could do that, but really, as far as him getting, you know, his work, it's going to be hard to promote to a certain extent. I mean, as far as just getting, you have to deal, right now, it seems that you have to deal with, you know, the big promoters, more or less, I guess the big three, or maybe the big four, however you want to look at it. But, you know, just because Shakur has a big name, but what direction is he moving in right now? I mean, to me, there are names that he needs, you know, that would more or less solidify him. I mean, he's not, you know, I just think that right now, promotion, you know, this would not be the time for him to change, you know, to move out of that stream. You know, I mean, maybe now I understand he might feel, you know, not satisfied with his current promotion. You know, maybe he could change promotions or something. You know what I mean? Not saying he needs to even go at the big three, but he needs to find something in his interest to further his career. Because right now his career seems to be not stalling, but moving slower than it should.
Okay, next week, Kai, we've got the big one that Eddie Hearn is expecting to have a knockout. Fury Usyk, what's your thoughts?
I said it time and time again. Usyk is my guy, but, you know, I lean towards Fury, I do. I still lean towards Fury. Unfortunately, I don't want Fury to win, but I lean towards Fury.
Okay. See?
Yeah, the closer I get to this fight, the more confident I am that Tyson Fury's not going to win. I see too much. I haven't seen slippage in Usyk. I've seen him having to change his style for heavyweights, and he's had to change his style according to each heavyweight. He was a little more stationary with Dubois because he could be. It's simple as that, because he could be. He wasn't with Joshua all the time because, you know, there are times where that bigger man is dangerous. Tyson Fury poses certain threats to him, but not in the realm of what could be Usyk to me. What could be Usyk to me is Tyson Fury a few years ago. Tyson Fury a few years ago could be the Usyk or Deontay Wilder, who has the one shot that may be able to catch Usyk. Outside of that, I don't see Tyson Fury bagging rounds on Usyk like that. Nobody really bags rounds on Usyk like that. Tyson Fury is a hard guy to bag rounds on too, but his is more established on, to me, recently, physical dominance. How he's 6'9", and he could put that weight on his opponent. Derek Chisora, as big as he is, not going to be able to handle, especially with the referee helping him, he's not going to be able to handle Tyson Fury leaning on him and hitting him, you know, for so long before his legs give out. That's exhausting. Usyk is polar opposite of that happening. Tyson Fury has refined his game since he's fought Stevie Cunningham, but he's also had slippage since then. He's also, you know, had slippage to where now he can and pour the all the way how he refined his game on a guy like Usyk.
They always reference, when they talk about Tyson Fury and Usyk specifically, right, they reference the Stevie Cunningham fight a lot, right, because size-wise, mm-hmm. you know, what you're thinking, most similar. Something I didn't know, but I just recently kind of came across, is very common in the U.K., so Zito, maybe you have a point, but something I didn't know, very common in the U.K. and very common in the boxing community in the U.K., is Tyson does not like to fight smaller, quicker guys. And they said his team is says that all the time, that he does not like to fight smaller, quicker guys. He said they just give him a little bit more trouble. He'd rather fight a guy he can look close to the eye level. He doesn't like punching down. So this is stuff he was that I didn't know. But it's funny, I just literally heard that a few days ago on something, and it made me think of Zito and his prediction. Even though I still lean towards Fury, I hope I eat crow. I really do. I hope I eat crow on this one because I want Usyk to win. But when I did hear that they said that Fury really doesn't like fighting small guys, it agitates him. It's agitating for him to deal with. It made me think of Zito, though. It made me think of Zito's prediction and the trouble that he did have. I mean, he's better, but it was, you know, he did have trouble with Cunningham and trying to catch up to him until he just grabbed him and said, hey, I'll make it boxing 1900 style and just grabbed him and did that. So hopefully there's a better referee that won't allow that. What he did to Stephen Cunningham was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and remembering, yeah. Just remembering that fight, Stevie Cunningham was more or less winning the fight. I mean,
the ref wouldn't allow me to grab with 280 pounds and punch with the other 280.
and Usyk's team has been talking to the referees about that also. So,
you know,
I mean,
that.
That's something
you
that's
know that.
a good bug to put in there.
Yeah, it's different.
So let me ask you the final question tonight would be, Ryan Garcia has thrown the gauntlet down and he's going to offer Haney a rematch. One, do you think he'll take it? And two, what kind of restrictions do you think that Haney will put on it?
Three, until Ryan Garcia passes the drug test, he just needs to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's more or less what I was going to go. If that B sample comes back, you know, correct, you know, not tainted, then you know he could move on with his career. If everything, you know, poses correct for him, and that is offered Haney this fight. I've heard that I think maybe the WBC has mandated Haney to fight Sandor Martin. To me, that's a good fight for him to take right now. The Ryan Garcia fight. As we talked about last week, they said that Haney was suspended. That's more of a medical suspension. You know, just for him to heal up for the fight. But outside of that, him fighting Ryan Garcia, if everything comes correct, I see Haney taking a rematch, and the stipulations would be you're not coming 3 pounds overweight this time. You know what I mean? As far as that goes, everything's going to be, you know, above board. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, guys, we're just at the end of our hour here, and I want to thank you both for such a great night. It's always great to every weekend to get together and talk to you like we're sitting back at a table at St. Peter's, just having coffee, talking, and it's always – you guys are always so well prepared.
We're allowed to curse now.
Hey, listen, you know who is running the senior center up there now? The seventh grade teacher. What was her name? Sister. Oh God, I just blanked on it. But the seventh grade teacher used to be there, not. Sarah, what was her name? No, we can't remember. I'm having a brain fart here. But she's back at the Old Helm running the senior center. But
I guess you all know that Mr. Sandra is back running the senior center. I guess Mike Rodriguez. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear she's still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought she was old then. So, I don't know.
And Mike Rodriguez did retire. Sergeant Mike Rodriguez retired from the Wilmington Police Force. Another member of your class. And each week we honor Artie Hope from your class at Howard. And like last week, we told everybody that her two daughters graduated from Delaware State last week and made their mother proud, I'm sure. And I guess that's it for that. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, the doctors and nurses and first responders on COVID, and the wonderful people in the supermarkets that keep the shelves stocked. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Patrolman Jeffrey Ezowitz, Patrolman David Curtis, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Shaw County Sheriff's Department, San Diego Officer Mike Handler, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Chris LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Chairman Anofo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, excuse me, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hodgrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Zachary Benn, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Office and Temple University Police Department, and Sergeant Ramon Mendez, Philadelphia Police Department and Philadelphia Airport Police. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roses rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week. And please, when you're out there and you see somebody that is a mother, please make sure you let them know that this whole staff, all of us combined, wish each and every mother out there a very, very happy Mother's Day. Good night. God bless. Saw him go, I will grieve you more.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Thank Bob. We love you and we miss you.